This is Next. I'm Morgan Springer. Okay, how would you define happiness?
Yeah, well, I think there's like a million different ways to define happiness, to be totally honest. But I tend to think of happiness in the same way that social scientists do, which is this idea that happiness is about having joy in your life and having joy with your life.
That's Professor Lori Santos, host of the podcast The Happiness Lab and a psychology professor at Yale University.
If we're maximizing kind of you being happy in your life, got lots of positive emotions, and you're happy with your life, you're really satisfied with your life at a meta level, then I think we can say that you're happier.
Professor Santos teaches the wildly popular class at Yale called Psychology and the Good Life, which is all about happiness. She also offers a similar course online where millions of people have enrolled.
I've been teaching psychology at Yale for over a decade now, but in just the last couple of years, I took on a new role where I became a head of college on campus. This is a role where I live with students on campus. I eat with them in the dining hall. I really see their life up close and personal. And to be honest, I didn't like what I was seeing. You know, so many of the students I was interacting with were experiencing depression and anxiety, and this wasn't just something that was true of Yale. I mean, the statistics are really scary. Right now, nationally, more than one in three college students is reporting being so depressed it's difficult to function. Over 60% of college students say that they're overwhelmingly anxious. And more than 1 in 10 college students has seriously considered suicide in the last year. And this is all kind of before COVID, right? And so I realized, you know, we weren't meeting our educational mission at Yale if we weren't dealing with this mental health crisis. And so the class was my attempt to, you know, bring together everything I know in the science of psychology about how to improve your happiness, how to boost up your well-being, and to package it for students in a way where they could really understand practically how to implement these ideas in their daily life.
Yeah, one of the things I find so interesting is that we think we know what will make us happy, but research shows that we're very often completely wrong. So what are some of the things we falsely identify as key to happiness?
Yeah, I think one of the big ones is our circumstances, just generally speaking. We think to be happy, we need to change our job, we need to get more money, we need to switch our relationship, we need to buy something. But the data show for the most part that unless you're in a really traumatic set of circumstances, for the most part, improving your circumstances isn't going to help. It might give you a little bit of a happiness boost for a short while, but it's never as big a boost as we think, and it's never a boost for as long as we think. We're much better off trying to change our mindsets and our specific behaviors. That's not what we tend to go to. You know, we tend to put a lot of energy into changing our circumstances, getting more money and that sort of thing, but that's just not going to impact our happiness in the way we think.
You say, you know, that anyone can be happy, but it takes work. That happiness requires like a lifetime of intentional habit. So what are some of those simple practices that you teach people that can help?
Yeah, one of the simplest ones is just to bump up your social connection. You know, there's a very famous study in positive psychology that suggests that a necessary condition for high happiness is simply being really social, just being around other people, prioritizing time with your friends and family members. And there's even evidence that the simple act of trying to like chat with a stranger can boost your positivity. You know, again, these aren't necessarily things that we think, but the science really shows that it's quite positive. It can really boost our happiness.
That's even for like introverts?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite parts of the study is that, especially in this sort of talking to strangers study, I get lots of emails from students and, you know, people who listen to my podcast who say, okay, that sounds like a great happiness boosting strategy if you're an extrovert, but as an introvert, I would hate that. And the researcher who did this work, Nick Epley, looked at personality variables like introversion. And what he finds is that introverts really predict that that social connection condition, the talking to stranger condition, will feel awful. It will really reduce their positivity. It won't just be neutral. It'll be like actively bad for happiness. But when the introverts really engage in that social connection, they get the same boost as the extroverts do.
So interesting. Okay, so social connection. What are some of the other habits?
Yeah, a second habit that's related to social connection is just to become a little bit more other-oriented, right? To kind of prioritize other people's happiness more than your own. And I think this is really countercultural. You know, right now, especially during COVID, there's a lot of talk about self-care or treat yourself, like self. But if you look at happy people aren't as focused on their own happiness. They're really focused on other people. Happy people donate more money to charity. Happy people tend to spend time volunteering to help others. They're just kind of paying attention to other people's happiness more. And the research shows that, you know, even if that's not your natural tendency, the simple act of forcing yourself to do nice things for others. In one study, it was, you know, spend some money on someone else. Those studies show that people who do that will really show a bigger boost in happiness than they would if they spent money on themselves.
So some of the other things that I've read you suggest is, like, you know, sleep at least 8 hours or write down things that you're grateful for. It makes sense that these things would work, but it also sounds like work. It sounds kind of tiring. So how have you personally been able to integrate some of these lessons into your life? And is it hard sometimes?
Oh, it's definitely hard. It's hard all the time. I mean, I'm the professor that teaches this stuff, and it definitely doesn't come naturally to me. I've had to make some pretty substantial changes to try to build this stuff in. But, you know, it helps to be the professor teaching this because I have to practice what I preach. You know, if I'm, you know, giving a lecture and my students can tell I haven't slept because I've been working on the PowerPoint, you know, they're going to call me out on that, you know, as soon as I'm like, hey, I'm telling you to get 8 hours of sleep. You know, same thing with acts of gratitude. There's so much work showing that this mindset of being more grateful can significantly boost your well-being, even in as little as 2 weeks of trying to put these sort of gratitude into practice in your own life. But again, it's kind of hard. You know, the opportunity cost is there. It's easier to complain than it is to think about your blessings. But again, nowadays, you know, if I try to complain to a friend over text, this often happens with my producer, Ryan, who works on my podcast. I'll be complaining about something and he'll be like, gratitude? You know, like, didn't you just have a whole episode on this? And so I have the social support to remind me that I'm supposed to be putting these things into practice. But as the research suggests, if you do that, you will see significant boosts in well-being. And I've seen, you know, just since teaching this course, you know, really impressive boost in my own well-being, mostly just because I'm doing these practices more often.
Yeah, when we emailed you to set this interview up, we got this automatic reply where you say, I am currently trying my own personal well-being experiment. I'm going to try to practice what I preach and reduce the amount of time I usually spend on email. So draw for us the connection to happiness there.
Yeah, that is my attempt to boost what's called time affluence, the subjective sense that you have a lot of free time. You know, we think wealth affluence builds happiness. We think if we had lots of money, we'd be happier. Not so much. But it turns out that if you're wealthy in time, you're definitely happier. Time affluence is the opposite of what many of us experience a lot, which is time famine, where we're literally starving for time. And research shows that the physiology of time famine works a lot like hunger famine, where you're like putting your body into stress by not having enough free time.
Yeah, there was this Harvard study that basically found that people on their deathbed, they were not talking about the great moments in their life being the moments at work, but they were talking about their connection with loved ones or their pride in their children that they raised. I wonder if this fixation, you know, like our false fixation on these big goals, like, you know, if I win an award or if I make more money, I'm going to be happy. I wonder if it just seems easier in the short term than like the more almost simple common sense things we've been talking about, like kindness, gratitude, or socializing.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is another spot where our minds really lead us astray. We assume that the happiness change is going to come, you know, if we get some big moment, right? The big award, the big accolade, you know, getting tenure at Yale or, you know, I don't know, like winning an Olympic medal or something. And again, it's not like those things are bad for happiness. You know, those moments feel good. But 2 seconds later, you've already done it, right? It's done. You know, I think one misconception we have is that happiness is a destination, right? That we'll get to somewhere and we'll be happily ever after. But as my psychologist colleague Dan Gilbert at Harvard says, happily ever after only works if you have like 2 seconds to live. Like, you don't want to get to happily ever after because like happiness just doesn't last. A better metaphor for happiness comes from another colleague, Nick Epley at the University of Chicago, where he talks about happiness as a leaky tire. You know, like you pump up your happiness tires with a little social connection and gratitude, and over time they'll kind of go down and you got to pump them back up again with something good. But it's not as though you do one pump and, you know, your tires are good forevermore. You kind of constantly need to be putting work into it.
I want to come back to the habits that help us be happier. Do these tips, like socialize more, sleep more, express gratitude, be kind, be in the now, do these apply during the pandemic?
Yeah, I think even more so. I mean, I think one of the big hits on our mental health during the pandemic has been a lack of social connection, right? You know, imagine a virus that at the time we most need to be like with other people, we're scared and we're uncertain. You know, that's the time that the virus says, nope, for your physical health, you gotta socially distance and isolate and so on. I think that's one of the reasons people are having such a hit is our even routine social connections, like chatting with the barista at the coffee shop. We're kind of not getting those naturally as much anymore. And one of the things I tell my students is like, this is a time when we need to be really intentional about getting social connection and, you know, make that Zoom happy hour with friends or, you know, call your mom or do that socially distanced walk with a colleague if you're able to do that, right? Just find ways to get social connection in because we're missing it so much.
You told The Atlantic that people should not waste this time period right now when we're in transition and more people are getting vaccinated and returning to pre-pandemic activities. What should we be doing right now to set ourselves up for more happiness when the pandemic is over?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, one of the things we should be doing is just being really intentional about kind of coming out of this pandemic moment. You know, there's probably not going to be a moment where, I don't know, somebody like clacks the director's, you know, thing that's like, okay, pandemic over, you know, like the time, you know, we're back to normal, right? But we'll all go through our own moments where we start going back to normal life. You know, once you're vaccinated and your friends are vaccinated, there's a real question about how much of the old life you want to build back. And so I think this is a moment where we need to be really intentional about the stuff that we've liked and the stuff that we want to keep. And one of the reasons that that's so important right now is that there's lots of evidence for what's called the fresh start effect, which is the fact that we're more motivated to start new positive habits at natural temporal breaks. You know, so if you switch jobs or if you move or if you have like a big birthday, you turn 30 or 40 or something, those are moments when you're like ready to start that new self-improvement project and you're more motivated to do it. This ending of COVID is kind of a natural temporal break for all of society at once. And I really think it's a moment that we could have a collective fresh start effect where we could all be building in healthier habits as individuals in our organizations and our families. And so it's important not to mess that up, to think really critically about what you yourself have noticed improved your well-being during this time and what you want to keep from COVID life and what you want to go back to from kind of pre-COVID life.
Lori Santos is a psychology professor at Yale University and the host of the podcast, The Happiness Lab. Professor Santos, thank you so much for coming on Next.
Thank you so much for having me.
Listen to Next from the New England News Collaborative, wherever you get your podcasts.